Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending. The fix and flip guys at kclend.com.
All right, here we go on a Friday edition of Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Steven Serto with you. The weekend right around the corner. We'll get to potentially games happening with fans in spring training just a little bit coming up. And in fact, maybe with the St. Louis Cardinals. We'll get into that and why that is a potential possibility. Plus at 10:30. Malcolm Jenkins, still not comfortable to play. His thoughts on what football is doing to make it safe for its players. And news down in Texas bringing, I think, some more concern perhaps of how is spring training and how is the NFL training camp and then ultimately the MLB season and the NFL season supposed to take place when you have some of these things that are going on. So we'll get to that and have some fun on the gambling front, too, with Ben Heisler at 10:45. He's the host and analyst over at SI Gambling and the long shot odds. Should we be putting any little money on the Royals, huh? Plus 30,000, I believe.
Got about a couple of long shots. By the way, there is a little breaking news right at the start of the show. Woj over at ESPN reporting that 16 NBA players have tested positive for coronavirus. That's of the 302 players tested. That would presumably be every player. Tests were administered on Tuesday within teams. And if you do the simple math, 302 would be about 22 teams worth of players. So 16 out of 302, not that bad.
To be expected. And there will be more, right? Now, the idea is if they're testing positive before they head down to Orlando, those individuals would be quarantined and then everybody else would be good. But remember, just depending on where the timeline is of everything, there could still be more positive tests to come. But yeah, I mean, 16 of those that tested positive, this is the first step that all of these leagues are going to have to do. You're going to have to test, and then they're going to try to, you know, quarantine. MLS, same kind of boat. We haven't really seen a ton of the testing for MLS come out as far as numbers. What, a couple Colorado Rapids players. We know Sporting sure. Kansas City, fortunately, did not have any positive test. But yeah, this is going to still be interesting to follow, and that just now coming out. We don't know who all the 16 NBA players are that have tested positive, but Woj I'm sure he'll get to the bottom of that very quickly. I'm going to guess, Cody, that he will get those names out for those that do want to know the names.
16th, he's not worried about HIPAA.
Yeah, well, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how some people look at it, you know, all these names have come out eventually anyway, one way or the other, whether from agents. I mean, look at the Zeke Elliott situation. Zeke was upset about his name coming out. He blamed the reporters on it, but then it turned out that his agent was the one that actually had confirmed that he tested positive. But 5.2% of the NBA players that will be in the bubble in Orlando so far have tested positive for COVID-19. And the NBA just sent out a press release on that themselves. And any player who tests positive will remain in self-isolation until he satisfies public health protocols for discontinuing isolation and has been cleared
between
by a
that
physician.
KU basketball's moved back their arrival date by 13 days into July. So we're just getting a little bit of COVID news to start the show. Again, 16 is better than I thought it was going to be. Like, I don't know what number I was anticipating coming out of that league, but considering it was like, Jokic tested positive. We know a couple of Nuggets have tested positive. That, you know, the ones that were leaking out, I guess I kind of anticipated maybe a higher number out of those players. If they can get those guys into the bubble right now, that's still 5% of the league.
Yeah, but if 95% of the league is able to right now go to Orlando for the bubble, which is what's going to take place, and then you have
the three players who have skipped it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then you have that 5% that tested positive, that they're going to be quarantined. They're not going to join you in Orlando for 14 days or whatever. and then they go down. And ideally, if the bubble works correctly, it doesn't mean there won't be another positive test or two, because someone may not have tested positive yesterday and still could, I guess, tomorrow or the next day. But yeah, I think actually that's probably, if you were to ask the NBA, they knew they weren't going to head to Orlando with no positive tests. There's no scenario where that was going to take place.
I mean, well, we already knew some people had tested positive.
So, I mean, that was, you know, that was not a surprise whatsoever. So, okay.
So when?
Let's see what the bubble, let's see what if the bubble works.
The problem is, like, this is still the advantage the NBA has over, let's say, baseball, who's supposed to be at spring training in a week. So it's safe to assume they're pretty much administer a huge swath of tests sometime in the next few days. And as Dade Moore said, as far as he knew, there wasn't. But as soon as everybody gets down there for spring training, all 60 guys show up in Kansas City here in a few days, Wednesday, right? They're going to give everybody a test. And that's 60 players, and it's not even partial teams. It's all 30 teams. That's 1,800 players. If it's just 5%, would you feel good if it was just 90 players that tested positive for Major League Baseball?
I think you would have to.
So that's the number that you should be okay with. Like, if we're okay with, you know, 16 in NBA, if it's 90 players across all of Major League Baseball, we should be like, not bad.
If you're being realistic about it, of course, yeah, you would hope there was none. But if you're being realistic about where the situation is and seeing where numbers are at across the country as well, yes. If you said that entering spring training on Wednesday, that's where the numbers are at for baseball as well, and if roughly you're finding that it's 5% heading in, yeah, the difference is there's not a true – remember, baseball's not doing the bubble, though. So it's even more beneficial. The NBA's got 5% of their players testing positive that are going to the bubble. Before they're in the bubble, they're isolating them. Then they're in that bubble. You would like to think that, you know, there's some precautions that are being taken place. We'll look at that some more, where they're going to lock down the facilities and have law enforcement involved and everything too. Major League Baseball, these guys are coming to Kansas City for spring training, but they're not in a bubble. Nope. So you can have the positive test, but there's not going to be a bubble that exists.
But you can't
even
protect it
training.
From going outside of that. Yeah, I still think that they're going to try to do a stricter curfew. They're going to attempt, like, hey, would you mind maybe, because the simple reality is they don't have the power to completely control that. So they're not.
No, but that's where personal responsibility is. Personal responsibility, but also not just.
90 sounds like a lot, but I guess that'd be a win.
And not just personal responsibility, but personal responsibility for professional athletes. Like that is their job. It's different when we talk about, you know, what the positive test at Kansas State or the positive test that will probably happen at Missouri and have happened at Kansas as well with the athletic departments.
Missouri announced, I think, some positives yesterday.
Okay. So, and that's going to happen. Well, those are student athletes. There's personal responsibility, but they aren't being directly compensated. They're getting a scholarship. You have NBA players or baseball players, some that are making millions of dollars on a year. That is your job. I think you do hold them to a higher standard in terms of their own personal responsibility within the sport. Like,
yeah,
they are getting paid by an organization X amount of money to perform at a high level and also to protect their own teammates and everything like that. I think there's a different level of responsibility that you would expect. You would expect the NBA players or MLB players to take it even more seriously in being willing for 3 months to go without,
because they're being paid
versus
to
the 18-year-old
make sure
college,
they're being
versus
safe,
the 18-year-old
yeah.
college kid. So
no, I understand.
We'll look at the NBA's protocols some more in just a little bit. Again, coming up at 10:30, also Malcolm Jenkins' thoughts on how the NFL is approaching it. But for this Royals season, as we know, yes, Wednesday, spring training, July 24th or 23rd, opening day. Still don't have that schedule out. But what is best in worst case scenario just on the field? And certainly on the field is going to be impacted by what does happen off the field with some of the testing with COVID-19. But you look best and worst case scenario. I'll start with worst case scenario for what the Royals, and then we'll get to more of the positive end on the best case. Worst case for me is, well, they were 19-41 a year ago in their first 60 games, right? So
yeah.
I would like to think they can't do worse than that, but that's where I think that's, if you're saying what's the floor, like what's worst case scenario, it's what they were for the first 60 last year. And 19-41 was that. So if you're going record-wise, that's where I would end up. And then also that during that 60-game stretch, a contributing factor to the 19-41 record, let's say, is that they have multiple guys that are out for 14 days at a time. Right, they have I don't want to name individual players, but there's, you know, you name a starting pitcher or you name your first baseman, whoever, they're out for 14 days at a time. That contributes to it. So worst case scenario is you're 19-41. It is a terrible 60-game stretch. You got multiple guys that are testing positive. That's how the season goes. That's where I would go on worst case scenario for the Royals this year. Best case scenario? Well, I think best case scenario is certainly they're, for the final week of the season, they're battling for a playoff spot, whether it's divisional or it's a wild card. We're talking that the Royals have 7 games to go. They've got 2 series left. We're into September, and they, you know, they're sitting there with 30 wins, 32 wins. They're right on the fringe heading into the final week of getting in. They have been able to comparatively get by with, yeah, maybe a positive test or two, but it wasn't a significant piece on the roster. They had a few of the young guys that we have said that they should go ahead and be aggressive with. They step in and they actually surprise, and they end up having key roles. Like, that's best case scenario. And I think for them to be entering a final week of this 60 game season where we're saying they're in it, they've got a chance. They win, you know, they win 3 out of, you know, 4 out of the 7 or whatever it may be. They win something like that, that they're in the postseason. Yeah, that's best case scenario type of stuff for me.
I think the best case is obviously they can be a playoff team, because we've talked about the best possible case scenario is still them, but not rolling off 40.
Right.
Like, it's going to be that low 30s number, 33, 34, 35, something that gets you in that wild card, could compete for the division depending on how everybody performs in a 60-game stretch. But for that to happen, they need 2 things to happen. 1, health. Which you could say about any season, but in particular, boy, is it going to matter in this one. In a 60-game win sprint, losing someone to a hamstring injury or a lat pull, like Hunter Dozier, right? In the last couple of seasons, like, he's missed, he had some lat strain. He missed like 6 weeks. Imagine missing 6 weeks in the season. Yeah, that's done. Yeah. That's the season.
Yep.
So, like, they can't have anything like that. A week injury, fine. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 week, those kinds of things. Never going to be able to make up, and they don't have the guys in the lineup can do it. I think it has to be a combination of that, and the bullpen has to take a huge stride forward from where it was last year. The arms are better overall, but possibly, you know, that's counting on Rosenthal and those guys and the young arms and, you know, Singer getting in the rotation and taking a shot forward and whatever it's going to work out to be. The pitching has to be significantly better, and they have to avoid having really any injuries inside the lineup. And I think still that only results in, if they perform well, 33, 34 wins. The worst case scenario, I don't think it's 19-41 as last year, because I still think they're a better team. I mean, if you want to go catastrophic, fine. But, I mean, barring that, even some injuries or a positive test that kicks someone out for 2 weeks, I think they're like a 22-win team at their floor. 21, 22 wins. I mean, I've looked at the last decade. We went over those numbers yesterday. 19 wins, that's happened like twice. Once was last year.
Yeah, that's why it's worst case. And once was 2006.
I know, but I think they're better than that.
Like, I think they are, but that's why I think if they are going to be worst case,
I think they're better than that if they're worst. I think last year's team,
even if they're getting injuries,
a lot of things. Yeah,
positive tests.
They had that last year.
A positive test. I think you have to. That's why the 60-game stretch is so different. It's not just so simple of, okay, how good are you truly? Can you even overachieve and surprise people? Yeah, you can be overachieving. You could have things go perfectly in terms of the young arms help out, your bullpen's good. But when you're talking about what would be worst case scenario, it's if you start getting banged up because you've got 3 or 4 guys at a time on a quarantine list for 14 days. Like, that's worst case scenario. But yeah, I think if you're saying that they're going to be in the mix in the final week on best case, it means they've got probably 30 wins heading into the final week of the season. And they've got a shot with 7 or 8 games to go.
Yeah, best case scenario is you're still in it. You know, like, normal case scenario would be like, hey, after 30 days, are you still in it? And at 15, I think at 15 and 15, you're in it. Like, any team. If you're 15 and 15, you're in it, right?
I told you, I'd sign up for that right now. If you said, hey.
Oh, they just give you 15 to 15?
Right now, if you said gold, I'll give you 500 through 30 for the Royals. I think I would sign up for that right now. Give me a fun final 30.
I mean, I'd probably take it. Would anybody take the other side of that? I mean,
I think I just have to take the
15 and 15. That's the thing about the schedule that may come out today, but Evan Drylich from The Athletic is making it seem like it might be next week as teams try to, I guess, finagle all of the travel and stuff themselves before they drop the schedule. Like, they're trying to give them enough time to solve it.
Oh, so you think the teams probably already have the schedule?
Yeah.
And then we're just waiting for
the report.
It hasn't leaked. See, my thing is, if the teams already have the schedule, don't you think it'd start leaking out? Generally, people aren't good at keeping secrets like that. I feel like if the teams are, they may have their opening series, but I just think that stuff leaks out.
I would say, yeah, but I don't know that the players have it, but I think the teams do. Like, does the MLB season ever leak out earlier than that?
Yeah, I mean, this is so different, though. Everybody's antsy.
Like, Evan Dralich had reported there likely won't be an MLB schedule announcement in this week. Clubs have to review and also finalize times. So here are the teams you're playing, and the teams are trying to work out all the things that come with it. When are we playing? Are we playing at 6? Are we playing at noon? What time's that team leaving? Who's leaving where? But I think as far as the teams you're playing on what date, I think all the teams have those things.
And what I'm excited about is there's still an outside chance. I thought this was done. There's still an outside chance of expanded playoffs. Now, maybe it's truly an outside chance, but apparently, despite this agreement being done, the MLB PA, and in particular, Executive Director Tony Clark, was asked by the Associated Press, he would not rule out that there is still open lines of communication between the league and the union. And I would simply say that if there's interest to discuss something, I'll be available to discuss it. So he has not said that we're totally done. Now, that's a very optimistic way of looking at it, but they're still open to discussing in an expanded format. And here in Kansas City, that is something that absolutely should pique everyone's interest. And I know some of the baseball purists don't like expanded playoffs, but what we were just discussing about a 60-game sprint, expanding the playoffs, all of a sudden, if you went from 10 to 12 even, let alone 10 to 60, even if you added just one more playoff spot in each league, that would be amazing. That would change drastically your feeling on whether or not, again, best case scenario type of stuff, and whether or not you're in it, how that impacts a potential trade deadline that's going to exist apparently at the end of August. So yeah, I don't want to get too excited by any means, but I guess seeing that there's a chance that it's not entirely shut on them, I guess they have to figure that out here awfully quick here, because the schedule is coming out too.
It's not going to happen. I think this is just Tony Clark's way of greasing the wheels for the next time this comes up. It seems too close. It seems like they're just saying it to say it. They're not exactly, yeah, I don't think they're, I guess the way I would put it is, I don't think that this is something that's realistic that happened. I'm glad that Tony Clark is saying, hey, look, we'll still have conversations with you if you want to expand playoff teams. But we know they turned down $25 million in pool money. So what's enough to get it done? Some people estimate it could be worth like $800 million to have expanded postseasons. You know, and some would say, well, it's $800 million for all the playoffs, and it's like $100 million to get the extra teams. Whatever it's going to be, it's a fair amount of money for Major League Baseball owners to have expanded playoffs. It also just so happens to make way more teams in it, which could be financially beneficial to teams just across the board for both keeping their team in play and giving themselves a chance to do it. I hope it's possible, but do any of us actually? I don't. I'm not optimistic that it's going to occur. They keep bringing it up, and that can't be by accident, but I feel like they're just going to want to hold on to that as a negotiating point for this next CBA.
And then with spring training, we heard from Dade Moore yesterday when he was on Fesco in the morning. He had mentioned when he was asked about fans in the stands, and toward the tail end of his answer, he said that when they were talking about spring training, they were one of the first teams, you know, to mention they would rather have their spring training, the start up of spring training at their home facility. Now we know everybody is having it at their home facility. But at the end, he said the reason why we also maybe like that is that there's a chance that fans could even be at a couple of the spring training games at the end. Well, Ken Rosenthal saying that clubs are permitted to schedule up to 3 exhibition games before the end of this spring training 2.0. And if you're a club that's not located near any potential opponents, you could schedule games against your initial regular season opponent leading up to opening day. We don't know who the regular season opening day opponent is yet. Now, if you're just thinking geography, if you would say, well, then naturally, wouldn't the Royals and Cardinals play up to 3 exhibition games before the end of spring training, so you get a little bit of practice in there and have some of those simulations going on. So something to keep in mind that theoretically at Kauffman Stadium, even before July 23rd or 24th, like on the 18th or 19th, there's a chance the Royals could have an exhibition game of some form or fashion. Doesn't mean fans would be there.
Dayton was talking like it was at least a possibility.
Oh, sure, it's a possibility.
Yesterday when he was on with Fesco in the morning, he said, 5 weeks ago, we weren't really sure what might be there, but there could be people. We're not sure. Like, the Giants have completely eliminated the possibility of fans. They're just going to sell cardboard cutouts. So they're done. But the Royals have not eliminated that. Most major league teams have not eliminated that. So the exhibition games are actually a pretty good idea, but I think it makes way more sense to just try to do it in whatever city you're going to be in, to play it before the regular season. I know maybe you don't want to show your cards to the teams before.
That's so weird. So let's say the Royals are opening teams, up in Minnesota.
It's not as weird as you think. The Royals did this 2 years ago. They went, and Major League Baseball teams do this all the time. they play their final couple of spring training games in the city that they're going to do it in. Sometimes they do it at the spring training ballparks. Sometimes they do it at lower level parks, but this is not the first time this has even happened in baseball in the last few years.
Well, I know the Royals have gone down to, like, for example, they played the Astros for two games and then they had the start of the regular season, but they didn't open up the season with the Houston Astros, if I'm not mistaken. That's why it's a little different. Now, everything's different this year anyway.
But the Angels have done it recently. They have played an exhibition against the team they were getting ready to face. Now, in those times, sometimes they put in lower level players or whatever it was going to be, because, you know, by that time, they're just settling up their rotation or whatever they're going to do. But it's, to me, it's not that weird. You're going to see these teams a ton this year anyway. There's not going to be any mystery between you and the rest of the AL Central. They're the only team on your damn schedule.
I think the way it should work is you have the mix. I mean, if Ken Rosenthal is reporting that teams can either play against a geographic opponent for up to three exhibition games, or would, if there's not a close opponent, they would just play them prior to opening day, their scheduled opening day opponent. So why shouldn't baseball then, if the divisions line up, then the Royals should open up theoretically then with the St. Louis Cardinals anyway. Like, the scheduling should work out. If you're baseball, if you're trying to cut back on travel, then why don't you just go ahead and have the Royals open up against St. Louis? And maybe be in St. Louis instead of in Kansas City. I don't know what that would be. Have the Twins open up against the Detroit Tigers. Because you're going to play the Cardinals at some point anyway. So why not open up that way?
I guess, but I don't know that they got that kind of flexibility. Like, well, let's make sure that we don't schedule the Royals to play the Cardinals because we're pretty sure that that's who they're going to have their exhibition game against.
No. That's not what I'm saying anymore. No.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, if they're giving you the option of having three exhibition games against somebody close, or if you don't have somebody close, you play against your opening day opponent. Well, then why not just make the opening day opponent the team that is closest to you, is what I'm saying.
I understand, but that's the same concept. It's like trying to finagle the schedule in a way that allows that to happen. I'm just saying, if you got to travel, you got to travel. Some teams it's going to be easier for, right? If you're in New York, even if the Mets are not your opening day schedule, you could fairly easily go play the Mets. And, you know, because you're going to face them at some point in the season. They're not likely to be your opening day. Could be. Because the Mets were decent last year and the Yankees were really good. So that might occur, but I mean, geographically, I'm not sure if it's a good idea for Kansas City to be driving 4 hours down the road to take on the Cards anyway. Like, they're going to have to go to the city that their original opening day is. I think they're taking less of a risk no matter who they're playing, just traveling to that city or staying home and have that team travel there for a couple of exhibition games. The question is, there are going to be some teams that just don't do it, right? Because some are going to be like, oh, you know, we just decided we're going to go to Chicago and play them for a couple of exhibition games. Well, the Cardinals are like, well, damn, we thought maybe we could just come to your place for a couple of exhibition games. Like, sorry, we're already going to Chicago. And then the Cardinals are like, okay, well, we'll just do our opening opponent, right? Like, no big deal. We'll take on the Brewers. The Brewers are like, ooh, we already had something going with the Cubs. The issue is that some teams might not be able to get in those exhibition games depending on how this all lays itself out. Now, maybe all 30 GMs will, you know, work out a way where everyone gets a game. But they should all just agree to, like, blackball the Astros. Like, the Astros don't get two games. No one agrees to pay them. Now, one other team's got to sit on that. One other team's got to take it for everybody. But they should just all not agree to take on the Astros before. It's just, like, the subtlest. You don't get warm-up games.
The Astros have gotten off way too easy with everything that happened this offseason now, and now that they may or may not even have any fans that are going to be booing them on a regular basis. They've got their own issues down in Houston and in Texas right now with some of the numbers spiking. We mentioned the NBA and the, 5% of players that are going to be down in Orlando for that, and we'll get into a little bit later. Apparently, they are locking this thing down pretty good. It's not going to just be NBA security, but they are going to have law enforcement involved as well. Do we really think that for 3 months, these guys that are used to be able to go out to clubs after games, that they're just going to stay in this bubble and not be trying to sneak people in? The NBA thinks, I think the answer to that is, yeah, there's no way that's not going to happen. So they're going to have some law enforcement. We'll have some fun more with that later on in the show. But coming up in 90 seconds, Cody's got your return to sports update. Plus, is football doing enough? And we'll get to our trash of the day.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending. The fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
Back here on Cody and Gold, coming up in 15 minutes, we'll talk with Ben Heisler over at SI Gambling about this 60-game MLB season. From a gambling perspective, should you be putting some money on the Royals?
Obviously.
Some long-shot odds, some prop bets. We'll get into all of that. Who are the favorites for this upcoming 60-game MLB season? We'll also get to the trash of the day in about 10 minutes. We had the news to start in the NBA with the 5% of the players that are going to be down in Orlando testing positive for COVID-19. Over in the NFL, they haven't got to that point yet because really nobody is all together yet. There have been positive tests in the National Football League, most notably Von Miller and Ezekiel Elliott, but they haven't even started their camps. They haven't even tried to get everybody together, and there's no plan for a bubble. Malcolm Jenkins, who certainly is not afraid to be outspoken about no matter what the topic is, he was talking with ESPN, and this is what he had to say about his comfort level playing football this year.
Not only, you know, us as players and who's in the building, but when you go home to your families, I have parents that I don't want to get sick. And I think until we get to the point where we have protocols in place and until we get to a place as a country where we feel safe doing it, we have to understand that football is a non-essential business. And so we don't need to do it. And so the risk, has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable with going back.
So he says the risk has to be eliminated. Now, I think no matter where, you know, like how severe then you're not playing.
Eliminated? Yeah, that ain't happening.
That's unfortunately, I think everybody can agree on that part. You're not eliminating the risk anytime soon. Probably not in 2020. You got to look further ahead to find that as far as eliminating the risk, certainly see what's going on right now. So if he is saying they've got to eliminate the risk for him to play, if he actually holds to that, then the Malcolm Jenkins is not playing football in 2020. And if he chooses to do that, that's his own choice. That is taking it literally as what he said, eliminating the risk. There is going to be risk, but we have seen, I think even the NBA, go back to that's the perfect example. I believe right now we'll see ultimately how it works. But it appears right now they are operating in the best way you could possibly do it. You know, we had Dr. Zachary Biney, who was on the show a while ago, and he's an epidemiologist down at Emory University in the Atlanta area. And he had mentioned, you know, his feelings about testing and all this. And he just actually sent out a couple of tweets. You may have seen it too, Cody, where he had mentioned that the NBA's plan right now is working. He said, based off of just the 5%, he's like, the key is going to be the constant testing of these NBA players. Well, sorry, if you're the NFL, this is where I think time is on their side. They can see this. If this actually works, not the bubble, but just the amount of testing, that is still eliminating some of the risk just by doing the testing within the athletes, because then you do know who to separate and to protect players like Malcolm Jenkins, for example. But yeah, he probably speaks for, I don't want to say the majority of the league by any means, but there's others in the NFL that feel the same way that Malcolm Jenkins does.
Again, it's such a greater number. The NBA can give you an idea, but it can't solve your problem. Because 16 players out of 302 feels like a big win. That would still be 100 NFL players, 90 Major League Baseball players, and that's at the 60-man rosters. I mean, which, you know, we know that they're going to have some version of. I think what he's talking about, you know, like, and I think he'd play if mitigate some of that, but they've just got to give people the same option they do now. NFL players should have the option to sit out. Like, that's the easiest solution for getting rid of people's, not getting rid of, but players who have legitimate concerns, have health concerns, have family with health concerns. You have to give them the ability to not play. Because this is going to be a bigger problem in the NFL. Like, it's a contact sport. They can't have a bubble. They don't have nearly enough things. So the best part about the NBA, like, you know, Biney's talking about is 16 players test positive. Great. We wait to introduce those 16 players for 2 weeks. They get the two negative tests we require. And now everybody's in our safe, confined area where we hope to never have another positive test. Let's say the NBA goes 3 weeks with not a single positive after that occurs. If you're the NFL, you're probably feeling really good, but it's not going to be the same. Major League Baseball players are allowed to take Ubers home. Okay, like, it's just the level of protection for some of these players. NFL players, they're not going to have those things in line. So it's hard to know where it's going to be a month from now, but I understand Malcolm Jenkins' complaint. I would just tell you the simplest thing on all these athletes is it's a sport. We know it's a sport. If you'd like to keep playing that sport, we'll give you millions of dollars to do it. But if you want to sit out, it's cool. We get it. Because you just can't force people to endanger the lives of themselves or others to force them to play a sport or hold them hostage. Like, well, then your contract's still for next year. Like, no, you don't get to just hold on to their rights or anything like that. They're just a free agent after next year if they were going to be.
I would expect them to go with the same philosophy that Major League Baseball and the NBA is taking.
They just haven't announced any of that.
Again, I don't think the NBA stuff, we didn't know far. Like, MLB just now finalized allowing
they were working through some other stuff, but yes, but I understand.
Allow them to finalize. If you opt out of your contract, you don't have to worry, but really worry about anything if you have a spouse that's pregnant or whatever it may be. Like, I expect the NFL to have a similar policy. If there is an NFL player that has a spouse or, you know, a child that has a respiratory illness or any other underlying health condition, if they don't want to play, they won't be penalized. Now, you're not going to get paid, okay? You're not going to get paid
if you have a health reason, then you should get paid. Like, if I can't you play
personally,
because...
You personally, yes, but not if my family member has. I disagree with you on that one. So, baseball's not even
October,
doing that.
November, December, baseball's not January.
Baseball's not doing that, though. Like, if Mike Trout's wife is pregnant, if he chose to sit out, he can do that. He can opt out, but they aren't going to pay him. You don't get paid when you... See, that you can allow them to opt out. It doesn't hurt them in terms of service time in baseball, but you don't get to opt out and choose not to go to work and still get paid.
But if you've got a family member who, like, if you have a kid who has a heart condition.
Yeah, but you don't get paid. You can opt out, and you're not harmed in terms of your length of your contract or whatever it may be. But, like, it's difficult. You don't pay them.
I'd be willing to go further, but that's fine. We're all, I would be totally willing to pay them. More than happy to, if I were an owner or ran the league.
Then you don't have anybody playing then.
I don't think that. Come on, that's ridiculous. We know that's not going to. That's taking it way too far.
There's people that aren't going back to work right now because they were making more unemployment, Cody.
But that's not the way. Everyone's not going to just skip the NBA playoffs because we agree that if anybody is sick, you can just skip. People are still.
You took me saying everyone literally as 100% of the NFL is not going to show up.
Yeah, I did. That's how you made it sound. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, everyone's not going to show up though.
No, that's not. I don't think so. I don't think that's going to be. Yeah, you might have 20 players instead of 5, or you might have 40 players instead of 5, and I'm okay with that personally.
I would like to see more NFL players come out and say what Malcolm Jenkins has said. Like, you know, Tom Brady's still out here just working out every day with all of his receivers. Like, Russell Wilson's
sending out FDR quotes to justify
Russell
it.
Wilson's doing the same thing. Like, I imagine a lot of NFL players across the country are doing that, and they're just ignoring protocols. But we need more players like Malcolm Jenkins to step up and say something, because Florida's setting records for positive tests every day. Texas is shutting down again. Like, it's not that hard to figure out. Like, do you want to see football this year? Do you want to see sports return? Because then we need to collectively agree on something, wearing masks and actually trying to get numbers to drop, because I don't blame Malcolm Jenkins for not feeling safe right now.
Oh, I don't blame him for not feeling safe. I'm not going to blame anybody that chooses to opt out. I just don't think you can go ahead and just give everybody the exact same contract and amount of money this year for not showing up.
Everybody for not showing up for just because they don't feel safe. If you don't feel safe, you don't have to get paid. But if you have somebody in your family, in your immediate area that requires that, I'd be fine if they got paid for that. But Jenkins is right. Like, I know that you're saying, you know, the NFL's got time, and they do. And the MLB didn't technically fully announce their plan of people opting out until a couple days ago when things were finalized. But there were rumors all the way back to April about the opt-out options for players. And that original agreement, because you're saying they didn't finalize that. Well, they didn't finalize it. But in the original agreement, all the way back when they originally paused the MLB season, there was an option to opt out for players who had pre-existing health conditions. The NFL hasn't announced.
Not for their spouse.
No, but that's fine. But the NFL hasn't announced any of that. That was April. That was 3 months ago. NFL clock's ticking. You got 2 months before the season starts,
You know why? Because March 26th, they announced that, because in March 26th was the baseball agreement in which that was announced. Guess what? Their season was starting 5 days after that, or was planned to start essentially 5 days after that. We're still, again, keep mentioning the calendar, and September 10th is still a ways away. Now, they got to get it figured out earlier than that, because training, you need to have that answered by training camp. So they've got less than a month now. We're inside of a month, or right around a month, depending on the exact date. The 28th is reportedly maybe when camp could start for a lot of teams. It was going to start the 22nd for some.
I feel like if you're going to give the players the option to sit out, you might want to give them a few weeks to think about it. Like, the Major League Baseball players have been stewing on this since April. And maybe an NFL player is too, but maybe they're only considering it if they can actually get that option. If they got a sick kid or a sick wife, or are themselves immunocompromised. Maybe they can't get paid if they're immunocompromised, because we don't know anything about that. Like, the NFL, it's just they have been shrouded in mystery in all of this, other than they're like, oh, you know, camp's probably going to start on time. The end. You're like, damn, you sure you don't want to have like a public plan? That's probably why Malcolm Jenkins doesn't feel real comfortable.
Trash of the day. All right, this trash of the day, a little bit different than yesterday, which was a board meeting down in Palm Beach. This one in Cambodia, doctors there recently removed a leech that had entered a man's penis while he was swimming, and it drank a full pint of blood. So it swam up into his penis. He went swimming in the river earlier that day, leading them to figure out that that's where the parasite had swum up into his bladder ultimately. The hospital warned locals the waters are rich with leeches and other insects during the rainy season. Unfortunately, the removal was complicated by the fact that the man had another issue as well and had ballooned a pint of blood. And that's why he had a lot of pain. The man was released from the hospital after spending the night there and is said to be faring okay. That just hurts reading the article, reading the headline.
I'm glad you don't have sound for this one today like you did yesterday.
Audio of the news report? I couldn't find it. Couldn't find that.
Just, oh man. Oh, that's no good. So many things that make me feel very deeply pained.
Weren't we just having a discussion the difference between swimming in a lake and swimming in a river? There's your difference. This was in a river. I know it's in Cambodia.
You don't think there are leeches near lakes?
I don't know. I think it's way worse.
Have you ever had a leech
be
on you?
I have not. I think it's the river is more likely than a lake.
I have in a creek. What's the difference? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
a creek is closer to like a lake's it could be man-made, whereas a river and creek would obviously not be. I think it's more likely to be near natural bodies of water.
I've had leeches on me.
I've had leeches.
It's horrifying.
Leeches are found in a variety of freshwater aquatic environments, including lakes, ponds, marshes, springs, and low streams. So, yeah, I mean, you can get a leech on a lake in you, too. It's not great. When we had them on, they're not great. And then you gotta, like, it just takes so much time to make sure they're not in a place you don't want them to be. You know, like, maybe inside of your penis. Maybe that's not where you are.
Ugh. Man.
Just horror show, man. Ugh. I don't. How does it even happen?
What do you mean? You guys have had you guys just said you had leeches. How does it
swims
happen?
Swims up.
Yeah, probably latched on initially, and then and then swam up right in there.
Well, I just don't like any of that.
Yeah.
No thanks.
That's the trash of the day here on Cody and Gold. Just completely nasty. We'll be joined by Ben Heisler, host and analyst.
Pick me up on a Friday.
Yeah, you like that? It's the trash of the day for a reason. I mean, yesterday, we couldn't. I mean, the crazy lady yesterday from Palm Beach, I mean, she was interesting, that's for sure. That one was better than this one today. I'll give you that.
Are you insane? Are you crazy?
Yeah, she was better yesterday than the leech story.
Just from a, like, inside my own heart perspective, yes. Because
someone on the text line, 913-576-7610, said they got leeches in a lake in Canada while they were in Boy Scouts. Oh, I don't deny that, the leeches.
Well, I've had leeches.
Yeah, I can't read that tweet. But yeah, I was thinking the same thing. How that all worked out in Cambodia. So you can submit your own trash of the day if you would like as well over on Twitter at Alex Gold, at Cody B. Tapp, at Steven Serta. All right, let's talk with Ben Heisler over at Sports Illustrated Gambling. Heist, good to have you on the show, man. We got some more sports to start talking about. Some odds out for this 60-game schedule for baseball. So first of all, how do you even approach a 60-game slate with so much unknown?
Well, first of all, it's good to be talking to you boys. It's been a long time, so hope all is well. As far as approaching it from a betting perspective with a 60-game schedule, I think there's a couple things in play. The first is that long shots, more than ever before, are legitimate contenders. And part of the reason for that is if you go back in history and you start to look and see where some of these seasons would have ended after 60 games, the Mariners, for example, haven't made the postseason since 2001. But had there been a 60-game schedule over the last 18 years, they would have been in the postseason three times. And one of those years, they ended up finishing with the worst record in baseball. So the 60-game season completely changes our entire mindset, both as bettors and also how we're going to start to look at these teams as far as getting off to a hot start, whether they can hang on. Everything just drastically changes. So I think from a betting perspective, in a year like 2020, this is the ideal time to go ahead and back a couple of long shots, because once you're in the postseason, regardless of what year it is, anything can happen.
And, well, I mean, this year too, because it's not like everyone's going to have the full evidence of what everyone's done. But Ben, before you tell us some of the long shots that might be worth betting, as far as the roster stuff goes, like when I'm looking at teams to bet, how far down do I need to be looking, whether it be COVID test or injuries that could knock people out for half a damn season? How far down the depth chart do I need to look for teams like the Royals or other long shots I might possibly think about betting?
It's a great question, Cody. I think once somebody made your test positive for COVID, which is inevitably going to happen over the course of the season, then you have to adjust accordingly regardless. And we know that the odds are going to change too. All these different, you know, legal sports books and probably some of the illegal offshore ones have adjusted already. Like, they've already returned different betting futures for Major League Baseball pretty much across the entire country and all over the world because they know that everything is going to be drastically different. So depth matters. Certainly pitching and bullpen opportunities matters. I would imagine, too, you're going to start to see more opportunities with starters going less into games because you're dealing with 60 games in a matter of 66 days. So the turnaround time for a lot of these starting pitchers, they're going to want to get them back. They're going to want to get their best players playing in such a short sample. That bullpen is probably going to matter more than it's ever mattered before.
It's so weird because, like you said, futures is the problem. All these teams that abide by this, if you didn't pitch 160 innings the year before, you can't pitch 200 innings this year. No one's going to be able to operate that way this year. Why, I guess, if we're thinking long shot-wise, Ben, would the Royals be an okay selection for this? Other than the fact you said, you know, I mean, they would have made it once in a 60-game season, but they were the worst team after 60 games last year. What would make them worth betting this year?
I mean, they're not on my list. I'll just tell you right now. I think...
Why's it got to be like that?
Right, yeah. Come back on the local radio station and just crap all over the Royals. That's not what I'm doing here. But I just don't look at them and say that this is a team that is likely to catch fire, especially when it comes to their pitching. You know, I think Keller is fine at the top of their rotation. I just don't know what else is there. And certainly the hitting left a lot to be desired from a season ago. Am I going to go ahead and completely rule them out? Probably not. I just look at them and look at what the rest of Vegas is saying. You know, right now over at PointsBet, the Royals are 300-1. That's dead last among teams like the Tigers is a part of that conversation. I think Colorado's in the mix over there as well. It's just, there's nobody that, I'm trying to think of sort of a similar example that's in last place as far as projected odds entering a season that ended up going to either win a championship or play for the championship. Maybe the Las Vegas team in the NHL, but you know, the NHL also gets really weird in the postseason as well. So they're not on the list for me, but again, it's a weird season and weirder things have happened. So you might as well go ahead and, for 300-1, Cody, I suppose if you want to throw just a dollar or two on them, you can go ahead and get a nice investment back.
I mean, you know, like a 20 spot, what's, you know,
you feel
starts
like you
to feel worth
to.
It.
Yeah, but not all of us are making that midday money, Cody.
That's right. We're talking with Ben
Dollar
Heisler.
Dollar might be the bet.
Ben Heisler over at SI. Okay, so who do you like then? I know the Dodgers and Yankees both are the favorites to win the World Series this year under this format. You guys over at SI and PointsBet odds put that out. So who do you like?
All right, so this is initially going to probably come across as a homer-type pick, but I do think the Cubs are one of the teams that I like at 22-1. They're the co-favorites with St. Louis in the NL Central. And I'm kind of looking at it from that same perspective of this is the last dance for them. They were a disappointing team last year. They finished about 7 games over .500. But their Pythagorean win-loss record, which is basically the expectation of the amount of runs that they scored versus the amount of runs they gave up, should have amounted to a 90-win season from a season ago. Conversely, Milwaukee should have finished at around .500, ended up having 89 wins. They got into the postseason. Chicago did not. This is the final year for guys like, you know, Chris Bryant and Kyle Schwarber, perhaps, along with some of their other key guys, for them to have an opportunity to all be together. A lot of those same guys from the 2016 World Series team. If they're bad out of the start, there's going to be a ton of trades. David Ross is the new manager there, and I think this is going to be an opportunity to have one last opportunity to galvanize everybody and get everybody back on the same page. I think the talent is there to be a legitimate World Series team, and on their pitching side, Yu Darvish has gotten substantially better in the second half of last season when he only walked 7 guys and struck out 124. So I do like the Cubs. It's not a complete homer pick. As far as other teams that I'm intrigued by, I think Oakland is a team. We saw a lot of sharp movement on them. They were listed originally at 30-1. Quickly were bet down to 25-1. They mash the baseball. Matt Chapman is really good. Same thing with Matt Olson. Chris Davis has projected 14 home runs in a 60-game sample. You know, I think there's some back-end guys in their rotation and Jesus Luzardo and AJ Puck that are really talented. And then a couple other sort of back-end teams that I'm intrigued by include Cincinnati at 33-1. They have some really good arms with Luis Castillo and Sonny Gray. They brought in Trevor Bauer, who has the opportunity to be an impact pitching arm. And then the San Diego Padres, Eric Hosmer, Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., who just exploded at age 20. He had 317, 22 home runs and 16 steals in just 84 games. They traded for Tommy Pham. So those are the teams that I feel like realistically from a long shot perspective actually have enough talent and depth to be able to make a run to get into the postseason and possibly a World Series appearance as well.
I'm sure there's some prop bet somewhere that'll exist if it doesn't already. Do we get the full 60 games? If I told you over under 59.5, for example, games played this year in baseball, would you take the over or the under?
Oh, give me the under. Because inevitably there's going to be enough players that probably test positive in this type of environment that at some point I think the season's going to end up on a delay at some point. So yeah, if it's 59.5, I'm more than happy going with the under there.
Ben Heisler, host, gambling expert, editor, everything else at SI Gambling. Thanks for the insight, man, and good luck on golf this weekend. I saw some of those picks out there, and I know you guys have had some success over the last couple weeks.
Yeah, we the SI Gambling team has picked two outright winners for golf. I don't think that's going to be the case this week, especially if Mackenzie Hughes, who shot a 60 on the opening round on Thursday, a 60, what, minus 10, if he ends up winning this thing. I think there was only one person who bet him on DraftKings, and nobody over at the Westgate Superbook in Las Vegas. So if we didn't get him, we apologize, but we'll try again and do better next week.
Probably Mackenzie Hughes' cousin on DraftKings.
Yeah, that was probably it. He put like $125 at 300-1, so salute to him.
See, this is what I could be betting the Royals right now.
You're right, Cody. You're right. If Mackenzie Hughes can shoot a minus 10 on the first day of the Travelers Championship, then the Royals can win the World Series this year.
Exactly.
There you go. Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. That's Ben
Heisler,
host and analyst over at SI Gambling. I honestly think it's everyone. It's almost a requirement, I feel like. On this show, this seems to be a requirement. On this show, each one of us, I'll place the bet for you. We have to all sprinkle a little bit of cash on the Royals this year.
Sure. We were going to do it on Brady Singer, remember, before the season got canceled? We were going to have Brady Singer as Rookie of the Year. Can we still make that bet?
I don't believe that is out there yet.
Okay. Well, if it is.
But whoever wins the Cy Young this year could be someone from, a five-game winner?
I mean, if we put $50 between the three of us, what are we talking about winning? $3,000 if they won it?
More than that. Plus 30,000, 300 to 1. 300 to 1 for $300 for every dollar bet.
That feels pretty good.
That's what I'm saying.
You can bet $50.
At least put $50 on it. Quite a bit. $25 on it, something like that. All right, coming up next, we head into the 11 o'clock hour. We'll get to our Chiefs Red Half Hour. Chris Jones seeking how much money by that July 15th deadline. We'll also look at Chris Sims' top 40 quarterbacks. We know Mahomes is one, but what did he have to say about Patrick Mahomes? That's next.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.